courtesy of VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, we have two reports about social media companies. First, Dan Friedel tells us about recent job dismissals at Facebook's parent company, Meta. And Brian Lin has a report on how more and more people are seeking out alternatives to Twitter. Finally, we present the next episode of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Meta, the company that owns the social media service Facebook, announced Wednesday that it will cut 11,000 jobs. Company chief Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook in 2004. In a letter to employees, he took responsibility for misjudging how the economy would change after COVID-19 restrictions ended. "This did not play out the way I expected," Zuckerberg wrote. He pointed to a loss of advertising and said people used their computers and mobile phones less often after the pandemic ended. He said he made the choice to hire more people because he expected the company's profits to grow. "I got this wrong," he wrote. The price of Meta stock shares has gone down by over 70% in 2022. At the same time, Zuckerberg directed the company to invest $10 billion each year to create the metaverse. Zuckerberg believes a digital universe will soon replace smartphones as the main way people use technology. In the summer, Zuckerberg's company reported its first ever revenue drop. It reported another drop in the autumn. A worldwide economic slowdown and a bad expectation for advertising hurt Meta and other social media companies. For example, Twitter cut 7,500 jobs last week as businessman Elon Musk took over the social media service. In addition, some social media companies are having trouble getting the same amount of information from their users. Last year, Apple made changes to the way its iPhones report user activity. The changes make it harder for social media companies such as Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat to send targeted advertisements to phone owners. In addition to the job cuts, Meta said it will not hire new employees at least until the spring of 2023. Zuckerberg said the company made changes to cut costs, but it was not enough. He called the choice to cut jobs a hard decision. Meta employees will soon find out if they have a job by email. If their job is cut, they will be able to use their company email to say goodbye to coworkers. They will receive at least 16 weeks of pay if they lose their jobs. The company's stock market price rose about 6% after the news was released. I'm Dan Friedel.
Next is this week's Technology Report with Brian Lin.
Twitter has already seen a drop in users since American billionaire Elon Musk bought the social media service last month. Some users and experts have expressed concerns about Musk's stated plans to limit existing restrictions on user content. Musk has said his goal is to protect the free speech of Twitter users. But critics say his plan could increase the amount of harmful content and hate speech appearing on the service. Musk also announced plans to start charging Twitter users $8 a month to keep a verified account. Bot Sentinel is a company that looks for inauthentic behavior on Twitter. It recently estimated the service saw 877,000 accounts deactivated between October 27th and November 1st. In addition, Bot Sentinel said it identified about 497,000 accounts that had been suspended during the same period. The company's findings were reported by MIT Technology Review. "We believe the rise in deactivations is the result of people upset with Elon Musk purchasing Twitter and deciding to deactivate their accounts in protest," Bot Sentinel chief Christopher Bozzi told the publication. Musk himself tweeted that Twitter user numbers have increased significantly around the world since the deal was announced. Musk did not provide exact numbers to support his claim. Even if Twitter did lose nearly a million users after Musk's takeover, the social media service still remains huge. The company said earlier this year it had more than 238 million active daily users. One of the main alternatives to Twitter is a service called Mastodon. It was created by German developer Eugen Rutschko in 2016. Mastodon looks like and operates very similarly to Twitter. It lets users post short messages and other content. The service does not have advertisements. But Mastodon is very different from Twitter because it uses a decentralized system. Each user must sign up to an independently operated server. The servers are largely run by volunteer administrators who link their systems together. Rutschko has said one goal of Mastodon is to provide the public with a social media network that does not depend on a centralized organization like Twitter and Facebook do. The service is also designed to provide more privacy protections. In a message posted on the service earlier this week, Rutschko said Mastodon had reached more than 1 million active users in the days after Musk bought Twitter. Ethan Zuckerman is a social media expert at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. He wrote in a message last week, "I've gotten more new followers on Mastodon in the last week than I have in the previous 5 years." Supporters of Mastodon note that no single company or person can force their will on the whole system or shut it all down. For example, they say if an extremist voice appeared on a particular server, it would be easy enough for other servers to cut ties. This would leave the account alone on the server with a shrinking group of followers. But this shared nature of Mastodon can lead to some issues. It is generally harder to find people to follow in Mastodon's unusual system than the centrally administered offerings of Twitter. Technical issues can also be more common on Mastodon, especially now that the service is experiencing fast growth. The design is also less developed than other services, and some users have noted a more difficult sign-up process. Content moderation is also a concern to some. This is because the process is completely run by server administrators who get to decide what users are permitted to post. Another alternative to Twitter is a service called CoHost, which promises its users their personal data will never be sold. Established social networks like Tumblr and the voice-based service Clubhouse have also seen recent rises in popularity. A few other startups are also gaining attention, including Countersocial and Tribal Social. In addition, there are right-wing offerings such as Gab, Parler, and Truth Social, the service launched by former U.S. President Donald Trump. I'm Brian Lynn.
You just heard this week's Technology Report with Brian Lynn. I'm pleased to have Brian join me on the program now to talk about his story. Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Your report centered on alternatives to the social media platform Twitter. As we heard, some users are considering leaving Twitter because of expected changes to the service. But would you be able to explain the word alternative a little more deeply for our listeners?
Sure, Ashley. The usage in this story, as you mentioned, relates to choices of a number of different things. In the piece, I explored some different social media networks that exist in addition to Twitter. So, in this case, each social media service is an alternative to Twitter. In this way, alternative is used as a noun, meaning two or more things we can choose from.
The word can also be used in other forms too, right? Such as an adjective.
That's right, Ashley. Alternative is also used as an adjective to describe something that is different from the usual or traditional. English learners might have heard alternative used in this way. For example, we can say an alternative newspaper, meaning that it is different in some ways from most other newspapers. Alternative has also been used to describe a whole style of music. It is a kind of music that is related in sound to traditional rock, but has also been influenced by other kinds, such as punk, hard rock, or hip-hop.
Thanks for those helpful explanations, Brian. And thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. And thank you again, Ashley, for having me.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. Last time, we talked about Martin Van Buren. He was sworn in as the 8th President of the United States in 1837. Not long after he took office, the United States suffered an economic depression. It lasted 6 years. The Depression was the major problem during Van Buren's presidency, but not the only problem. In foreign affairs, one of the chief problems Van Buren faced was a dispute with Britain about Canada. Canadian rebels had tried twice to end British rule over Canada. They failed both times. Rebel leaders fled to safety in the United States. There, they found it easy to get men and supplies to help them continue their struggle. The rebels built a base on a Canadian island in the Niagara River, which formed part of the border between the two countries. The rebels used an American boat to carry supplies from the American side to their base. In December 1837, Canadian soldiers crossed the Niagara River and seized the boat. One American was killed in the fight. For a while, Canadian forces and the rebels exchanged attacks. A number of American citizens assisted the rebels. President Van Buren was troubled. He declared that the wish to help others become independent was a natural feeling among Americans. But he said no American had a right to invade a friendly country. He warned that citizens who fought against the Canadian government and were captured could expect no help from the United States. Another problem between the United States and Canada at that time concerned the border along the American state of Maine. That part of the border had been in dispute ever since 1783. That was when Britain finally recognized the independence of the United States. Years later, the King of the Netherlands agreed to decide the dispute. The king said it was impossible to decide the border from the words of the peace treaty between Britain and the United States. So he proposed what he believed was a fair settlement instead. The United States would get about twice as much of the disputed area as Canada. Britain accepted the proposal, but the United States did not. The United States refused because the state of Maine would not accept it. In 1838, Britain withdrew its acceptance of the proposal. Canadians entered the disputed area. The governor of Maine sent state militia forces to the area. The soldiers drove out the Canadians and built forts. Canada, too, began to prepare for war. President Van Buren sent General Winfield Scott to Maine. Scott was able to get the governor to withdraw his forces from the disputed area. He also received guarantees that Canadian forces would not enter the area. The danger of war passed. Americans in the border area, however, were angry with President Van Buren. They believed he was weak because he did not want war. The president was losing support, not only in the Northeast. People all over the country were suffering because of the Depression. Most people believed Van Buren was responsible for their troubles, because he continued the hard money policies of former President Andrew Jackson. Historian Joel Silby is an expert on Martin Van Buren. He says most historians do not think Van Buren was a strong president. However, Joel Silby says Van Buren left an important legacy.
When it comes to the political system, he was a brilliant innovator.
Van Buren organized his political party, the group that came to be known as the Democrats. In the late 18th and early 19th centuries, people who supported independent farmers and states' rights over a central government generally followed Thomas Jefferson. They called themselves Democratic Republicans or Jeffersonian Republicans. Jeffersonian Republicans opposed the Federalist Party. They believed the Federalists wanted a strong national government, a powerful banking system, and a small elite social class. But after Thomas Jefferson died, the Jeffersonian Republicans broke into factions. They divided their support among several candidates during presidential elections, and as a result, often lost. Joel Silby says one of the things Van Buren had learned was that above all else, when you have an ideology you want to fight for, you need unity. Van Buren organized political clubs and political leaders in New York that all supported Jefferson's ideas. He brought them together to talk about their political beliefs and choose a single candidate for their party. In the 1828 election, Van Buren had expanded this organization. His insistence on political unity had helped elect Andrew Jackson. And his system of meetings eventually became the national conventions that political parties use today to officially nominate their candidates. Van Buren also helped create the modern political campaign. In the 1820s, he noticed many state constitutions were lifting some of their voting restrictions. As a result, more people were allowed to vote. Historian Joel Silby says Van Buren wanted to bring these new voters into his political party.
He borrowed from a couple of minor parties the notion of popular campaigns where you persuaded people through campaign rallies, speeches by prominent people, and on election day, getting them out to vote by your organization's agents.
Joel Silby explains that these techniques to persuade and mobilize voters were new to national politics. Now they are some of the major features of political campaigns. Martin Van Buren's political tactics earned him a few nicknames. Some called him the Little Magician, because he knew how to win elections. Others called him the Sly Fox of Kinderhook. Kinderhook is the town in New York where Van Buren grew up. The term Sly Fox is not entirely positive. Joel Silby says the nickname suggests that many people did not feel they could trust him.
Van Buren is the first person to be seen as that, a manipulator, unfairly said he would do anything to win an election, and he had no real principles.
However, Joel Silby says Van Buren did what he thought was necessary to preserve Jefferson's ideals. In the election of 1840, Van Buren ran for a second term as president. This time, his opponents used Van Buren's political skills against him. Joel Silby says the Whigs used popular speeches and rallies to portray Van Buren as a failed president.
During his reelection campaign in 1840, crowds of Whigs would chant, "Matty Van is a used-up man," because he no longer had any power or effect on things.
The Whigs also nominated a military hero they believed the people would love. He was General William Henry Harrison. Harrison had led an attack on Indians in the Indiana Territory in 1811. Many people believed that the battle at a place called Tippecanoe was a great victory for Harrison. But Van Buren's party, the Democrats, spoke of the 67-year-old Harrison as an old lady. They called him Granny Harrison. One Democratic newspaper said the old man did not really want to be president. It said Harrison would be happier with a $2,000 a year pension, a barrel of hard apple cider to drink, and a log cabin to live in. Hard apple cider was a popular drink among working men, and at that time, a great many farmers still lived in log cabins, houses made of rough logs. The Whigs were the party of bankers and businessmen. They saw a chance to use the Democrats' statement to their own gain. It gave them a way to present themselves as the party of the working man and the small farmer. "The statement is right," they cried. "The Whig Party is the party of hard cider and log cabins." The Whigs put up log cabins everywhere and offered free hard cider to everyone. They organized huge outdoor meetings for thousands with food and drink for all. They held parades and marched with flags, bands, and pictures of William Henry Harrison. Many campaign songs were written. These songs told of Harrison's bravery against the Indians. They told how he loved the hard and simple life of the common man, even though he was really a Virginia aristocrat. The Democrats made their own claims. They said Harrison could not read or write. They said he would not pay people the money he owed them. And they charged that Harrison even sold white men into slavery. Senator Henry Clay said the campaign was a struggle between log cabins and palaces, between hard cider and champagne. The state of Maine held elections in September of 1840. Voters in Maine elected a Whig, Edward Kent, as governor. They gave the state's electoral votes to Harrison, celebrated as the hero of Tippecanoe, and to his vice presidential candidate, John Tyler. The election results produced a new song for the Whigs, "And Have You Heard the News from Maine and What Old Maine Can Do?" She went hell-bent for Governor Kent, and Tippecanoe and Tyler too.
"Then let them talk about hard cider, 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 and log cabins too. It will only help to speed the ball for Tippecanoe and Tyler too, for Tippecanoe and Tyler too. And with them will beat little Van, 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 Van. Oh, he's a used-up man, and with them will beat little Van."
One by one, the other states voted. The election was close in the popular vote. But Harrison received 234 electoral votes compared to only 60 for Van Buren. And so William Henry Harrison became the 9th president of the United States. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.